All right. Today's mitzvah lamed, which is Shaloli Shava Lashov. It's the third of the Aseres Adibros, Lotisa es Shem Hashem Elokecha Lashov. And the first thing I'd like to do is to give you the psikta's pshat in why the Torah expresses the rule of not swearing falsely in God's name in such a strange way. The verb used is Lotisa. Which is usually translated, do not bear the name of God falsely. So it even sounds like the drash in English, do not bear the name of God falsely. Right? So that in the Psikta de Rabbi Kahana understands this to mean, and he gives a specific example. Don't wear tefillin all day where people will look at you and say, oh, there must be a holy man. Right? And then you go about, cheating in business or the like. It's like a con man. What is a con? Confidence. You build higher confidence by bearing the name of God, so to say. But when we do so falsely, if we falsely bear the name of God, there's no greater chilul Hashem than that. There are lots of people who steal and cheat in business. But for someone to do that while falsely bearing a standard of being godly is nothing but a significant chilul Hashem. Right? Do your cheating on your own time. Okay, the Gemara tells a story of someone who went to an inn, and the guy who was the innkeeper behind the desk was wearing tefillin. So he said, oh, here must be a holy man. Everything here must be kosher. So he left his wallet and some valuables with him over Shabbos without bothering to get a receipt or anything. He said, that's a holy man. He's wearing tefillin. After Shabbos was over, when he came time to get his stuff back, the guy said, I don't know what you're talking about. You never gave me anything. If you say I owe you something, show me proof that you gave it to me. Right? So, now, how does the Gemara know that the guy actually did give him this stuff? Right? So he said that he came up with a plan. He came up with a plan that he went to the man's wife, went to the innkeeper's wife, and he told her, your husband told me a secret. He told me that on Yom Kippur you eat, and on Shabbos, you work and prepare food for your inn. And then he told me that you should give me my stuff back. So she said, oh my goodness, who else in the town knows that we eat on Yom Kippur and that we violate Shabbos? It must be that my husband really told him. So she gave him the stuff back. And when the innkeeper found out that she gave the stuff back, he killed her. This story is told by Tosfos and Daf Mem Tes in Maseches Shabbos when discussing why men don't wear tefillin all day anymore. They only wear it to davening in the morning. Right? There's some Anshei Maisa like the Vilna Gaon or Rashi, apparently. I see all the paintings of Rashi, he's wearing tefillin. Right? Right, the Vilna Gaon, all the pictures of him, he's wearing tefillin, so they must have worn tefillin all day. There are some yeshivas in Israel where they wear tefillin all day. Anyway, so Tosfos explains it's because of this Gemara, this Medrash, that men don't wear tefillin all day any longer. So the point is that it's too easy to be over on Lo Tisa as Shem Hashem Elokecha Lashav when you're wearing tefillin, because you are bearing the name of God with your actions, and then it may be false. Okay, that's why, according to the Psikta de Rabbi Kahana, the Pasuk says, not loti shavab lishbishmi lashav, or something like that, but loti sa eshem eshem elkecha lashav. Right? This is what especially makes it a chilul Hashem. Right? There's no other of the Aseres Adibros that says, Ki lo yinokeh, Esa Sheresh Yisrael Shmo Lashav. Right? It says, I will not absolve you if you take my name in vain. It doesn't say that I will not absolve you if you commit murder. If you commit adultery, it won't be absolved. No, only for this one. So Ibn Ezra explains what's so significant about this is that there probably are some very, very demented, sick people who can get addicted to violating some of the Aseret HaDibros. Yeah, it's a pathology, no doubt. Addicted to stealing or whatever else. But Ibn Ezra says, I've noticed in my activities, my comings and goings in the world, that Dibra number three is just so easy to get accustomed to violating. He says, I see it happening all the time where people, they just say, oh, I swear to God, this is true. I swear to God. And if you tell them, you know, you're not supposed to talk that way. You shouldn't be just taking things so lightly. So say, you know what? I swear to God, I'll stop. I swear to God, I'm going to stop. I won't do it again. So here's the point. We're all born pretty helpless and selfish. Right? We need good instruction. But absent that instruction, we're selfish. We'll remain selfish. Right? If I see another child at the age of three getting to play because he grabbed the toy from someone else, so I'm not sophisticated enough to know that that's called stealing and that's wrong and it's not good socially and it's not good for society. I'm going to steal too. Right? Unless I'm taught otherwise. Now, part of that is that we need to trust each other. When we speak, we need to understand that no less important than when I cross the light, I have an expectation that the cars who are coming perpendicular to my travel plans are going to stop at a red light. Right? We have to have some modicum of order in society where I expect that what you tell me is true. Now, there are some times where there are disputes and there are doubts, and we need to uplift the status of believability of a person with what we call a shvur, so that we can satisfy another person in a dispute. Right, you say it's yours, I say it's mine. Now, the first mishnah in Bava Metzia, and Tosfos on this mishnah say that we will never allow two people to both swear on something if we know that one of them is lying. So Tosfos asks about the first mishnah in Maseches Bava Metzia. Everybody know what the mishnah is, right? The two people holding on to a talis. This one says it's all mine. This one says it's all mine. And they're holding on, right? So they both go into court and they both take a shvur. They don't say, I swear it's all mine. And the other one says, I swear it's all mine. There's no need to swear that way, right? Because
it says, Shnei Moksim Metalos, Achad Omer Kula Shali. It doesn't say Chatzi Shali. It says Kula Shali.
No, Robbie, I just said that. We're not going to make them swear that way. That's their claim when they come into court. I'm not going to make them swear that way because they don't need to, because they're not going to walk out of court with the whole thing. They can't both walk out of court with the whole thing. We're going to split this thing, but here's the deal. Listen carefully. Since we're going to split it, let us not make them both make a claim that cannot be true in deed and in fact. That thing cannot belong to both of them fully. So what they end up saying is what Rabbi just said. They end up saying the gist of what Rabbi just said, but this is how they say it. Each one swears that I don't own less than half of this thing. That can also mean the whole thing. In fact, neither of them is backing down on their claim. Right? But each one says, I swear that I don't own less than half of this. In fact, I think I own all of it. Okay? So Tosfos asks, how do we allow two people to make a shvua when we know one of them is lying? We can't let them into court and lie. So the answer is, Howard, I see you're
No, but why, I wouldn't assume that they're both lying. They may be confused or misunderstand their legal status, but that doesn't mean they're lying.
Yeah. Gemara says that they can both actually feel that it belongs to them.
Right? Let me ask you, if you're in front of a Beis Din and you say, Kula Shali, I understand you didn't necessarily swear, but you're sworn in as testimony, you know, so... You're saying that they say kula shali, but they say it, I will not take less than half or something like that.
No, I don't own less than half. In fact, in parentheses, I actually own all of it. But why make someone swear I own all of it, when we can blunt the force of the oath? We were always very afraid of oaths. Blunt the force of the oath by saying, I don't own less than half, because that's in the end what I'm going to get. Now, in this case, the Gemara says yachloku. But there are some cases where if we do know one of them was swearing falsely, for instance, the Gemara says later, this one said, I wove it. And the other one says, no, I wove it. In that case, we will not allow oaths. Because when it comes to weaving something, you know what you wove and you know what you didn't. There's a liar here. So what we do with this in such a case is called Yehe Munach Ad Sheyavo Eliyahu. You put an escrow. Not that Eliyahu is going to judge the case. No, that's not Eliyahu's role. The assumption is that when Eliyahu comes, everyone will start to tell the truth, and that the liar will step forth and say something like, oh, I just realized that he's going to try to save face, right? And he's going to say, oh, you know what? I made a mistake. I wove something and I put a little corner sign and I mixed it up. Okay, that's not me. Okay, he can keep it. Okay, so that's the second option.
Yeah, but what happens? But in that case, there's a guy that really did weave it. He loses out on everything.
That's true. I have to tell you, there's another case like this where I loaned Robbie loaned between Robbie and Howard, one of them 100 and one of them 200. And they both claim that I loaned them the 200. What should you do? One of them 100, one of them 200. So I do admit I owe 300 between the two of you, but each of you makes the claim for the 200. So one opinion in the Gemara says, give them each 100 and put the other 100 in escrow. Right? But then the Gemara says, no, that's not what we do. What do you think? What should we do?
Well, first of all, you're supposed to have a document as to what it is. If you don't have that document, you should pay the 200 to each of them.
It's a good question. That's Chenvoni Alpin Kaso. That's a different situation where... Yeah. Where my workers do that. Howard worked, and I owe Howard $100, and I give Robert $100. I say, Robbie, give this money to Howard. So Howard comes back to me next week and says, you know, you never paid me. I said, what are you talking about? I gave it to Robbie last week. So I go to Robbie and I say, Robbie, why did you give Howard the money? And you say, I did give it to Howard. What are you talking about? I gave it to him. I go back to Howard and said, Howard, Robbie said he gave you the money. And he looks at me, he says, no, he didn't. So in this case, I have to pay both of you. I mean, I don't have to pay Robbie. I have to pay Howard.
Right, but in the Gemara, there is a case that if I claim you owe me money and I don't have the document and you claim that you don't, you only pay me. It's on me because I don't have that document.
Robbie, here in this case, I agree I owe one of you 100 and I owe the other 200.
Yeah, but they're taking a document.
Said, I'm the one who owes the 200. Who is owed the 200. All right? Anyway,
why don't you do this? Give each 100 because we're sure that you owe at least 100 to each. And the other 100, you gave it to Tzedakah because that's going to benefit the community.
Before you came on, I mentioned that that's the Gemara's first opinion. Then the second opinion says that if we do that, we give no incentive to the liar to come forth. If you put the whole thing in escrow, then the liar is going to say, oh, he doesn't want to lose $100, even, you know, unless he's such a schlub that he doesn't mind losing 100 as long as he causes the other to lose 200. But then he'll come forth and say, oh, yeah, my goodness, I remember I got mixed up. I thought I was, oh, yeah, you're right. He gets the 200 as long as I get my 100.
Yeah, but, but that's not a proof, because the guy that's really owned 200 may say, I'll do that anyway just to get my 100. Now, why should I lose 200? So I'll lose 100.
Wow.
I need the money. The
Gemara says that that's not human nature, but okay, maybe. All right. Anyway, there are two other options very quickly, what a judge can do rather than tempt the possibility of a false oath in court. The two options are, get this, shuda de dayani, which means the judge has the legal option without proof, without due course, to throw, shuda means throw the money to the one he thinks looks to be more believable. It's practiced very rarely. They have to talk it over with the whole Sanhedrin, but that's shuda de dayani, the whole Beis Din. Shuda de dayani. The fourth option is kol da alim gvar, which is even more rarely observed, where the court just says, listen, guys, we can't tell which one is the correct one. You fight it out. And the Ritva explains that kol da alim gvar, the assumption is that the person who really owns this thing is going to fight harder at getting it. I'm just saying the ritual. Anyway, but the last two cases were extraneous. The first two cases are the Beis Din will do everything in its power and control to assure that a false oath does not make its way into my court. Okay? All right, now on Daf Lamed Maseches Shavuos, the Gemara gives so many cases, amazing cases, and I'm going to give you the one that is probably even that just so everything else is a kav v'chomer. Here's what it is: the Rebbe goes to his Talmud and he says, "I loaned this man $1,000. He has admitted to me that he owes me the $1,000." In fact, one witness saw me give him the $1,000. But you know the halacha. You need two witnesses to extract money from somebody. Right? I trusted him. I don't have a contract. I don't have a shtar. Here's what I'm asking you to do. I have a court case with him tomorrow. All I'm asking you to do is to walk into court with the one witness that was there and saw me give him the money. When he sees you walking in with him, he will think that I have two witnesses, and I suspect that he will back down and admit that he owes me the money. The Gemara says, "Lo tisa eshem Hashem Elokecha l'shav." That is creating a false impression in court. Okay. And once you get into a courtroom, you are under such oath not to be misrepresent anything. Okay, it's interesting because the Torah says twice lo tishakru, and the Torah says midvar sheker tirchak, and yet the Gemara is all over Shas say that rule is limited to a court of law. In other words, there is no categorical mitzvah in the Torah, you won't find it in any listing of the mitzvahs, that the Jew is not allowed to lie. Adarab, the Gemara says you're allowed to lie if doing so in the interest of peace. Right?
No, but here it's in the interest of justice, actually. If you think the guy is going to lie and say under oath that he doesn't owe the money or whatever it is, in the interest of justice, by showing that there's two witnesses, you would think that would be allowed to do. It's a very, this case has come up in the American courtrooms where someone said this person is dead or something, and the lawyer says to the jurors, Mr. Smith is walking through the door right now in 2 seconds. Look at the door. And the jurors look at the door and he says, see, you don't believe beyond a reasonable doubt that he's dead because you looked at the door. This has been used in American courtroom stuff.
Yeah,
like
what's
this.
Always interesting is that the defendant never looks at the door.
But that's another thing, by the way. If the defendant didn't look, that's what the prosecution would say.
Yeah.
But I'm
okay,
saying,
anyway, so okay, but the point is that of course we'll allow an oath if there's a possibility that he's lying. Every oath ever made in any Bezdin always has the possibility that the person's lying. If not for that possibility, we wouldn't need the oath in the first place.
No, but here you know he's gonna lie. You just said that the guy already is saying you didn't pay it or you owe me whatever it is. You know the guy is going to lie. The only way to dissuade him from lying is showing that there's a second witness, and therefore he would not lie.
He wouldn't have to, though, because there are two witnesses.
No, but there's not really two witnesses because he didn't tell the second guy to testify falsely. Right. He just said make believe so that the guy will tell the truth.
Robbie's taking an interesting tack. The Gemara does not take this tack. The Gemara says that it's just the pashut usher for the student to do it because he's creating a false impression in court. Robbie's taking it from the other side. He goes, no, I'm not. It's not even about the impression. It's not. And I don't want the man to be swearing falsely in court. Okay, then drop the case. No, I want my money. Right? But the fact is, if you only have one witness, then you have no case. But here's the thing. Here's the point. This is a technicality in Shas, especially in Bava Metzia. If I claim that you owe me $1,000 and you say, prove it. Hamotzi michavirov, alav araya. You want to say that I owe you money, prove it. And I say, I don't have proof, but I have one witness. One witness cannot extract money. But Ravi, one witness can, but this just poses your question over again. One witness can force an oath, right? Lenny, if I say you owe me $1,000 and you say, show me a star, show me a contract.
Correct.
I'll say, well, I have one witness who saw me give you the money. Right?
Correct, but that's my point. You're forcing a guy to swear.
Okay, but Lenny still has recourse. He can say, what are you talking about? When you gave me that $1,000, you were paying me for a month's rent. You were living in my apartment. What are you talking about? When you gave me that $1,000, you were paying for a piece of jewelry that my wife gave you. What are you talking about? You know, he has all kinds of other recourses to say, right? Then I'll go back and say, no. My one witness saw you ask me for the loan and say you're going to pay it back by a certain date. That was a loan, and you know it. He goes, well, I'm sorry, you only have one witness. Okay, that one witness can force an oath. So then let's get back to Robbie's question. Robbie's question then was, well, I'm just asking my student to prevent this guy from making a false oath because I know that's happening tomorrow. It's going to be a terrible chiloshen because I know that. Well, here's what happens when two disputants go into a court of law. Right? Is there always a liar?
No.
I'm so sure I gave you the money. Well, maybe you're wrong. I gave it to him. But what brought daylight? I gave it to Lenny. Well, maybe you're wrong. If he denies it, maybe you should look back into yourself and next time write a contract. Next time, get two witnesses. There's a reyesa here. You've weakened your case by only having one witness.
Well, what happens if the witness died? I had two witnesses. One of them died. You don't know the situation. Okay. One's away on vacation. There's a lot of things that could come up. Why I don't have the two witnesses.
Okay. Okay, that's now, if this was a Shirin Bov Metzia, I'd get off on that tangent. Let's now speak about the straight issue of Lo Tishor Hashem El Shem Elokecha Lashav. Because there's four different types of shvuas. Until now, I've been mostly talking about what's called shvuas ha'edus, an oath of testimony. The oath of the third of the Aseres HaDibros is called a Shvuas Shav. Now, what does Shav mean? Shav means worthless. The oath was worthless. As opposed to a Shvuas Sheker. A Shvuas Sheker is not worthless. You can't tell that a Shvuas Sheker is worthless at the time it's made. Adrava, Shvuas Sheker is meant to make me believable. So what is a Shvuas Shav? Look at the Sefer HaChinuch. He writes, Shelo nishba lebatola. Shnemar lo tiso Hashem Hashem lekecha lashav. So there are four different types of Shvuos. Shvuas Eidus, Shvuas Shav, Shvuas Sheker, and the fourth Shvuah is called Shvuas Bitui. Shvuas Bitui, which is Levates Hosayim. Bitui means just something you basically take upon yourself. I swear that I'm not going to eat tomorrow. That's called Shvuas Bitui. I swear that I will eat tomorrow. Okay? The first mission is Sechet Shvuas. Shvuas Shtayim Shehin Arba. Right? The two that are four is, there's a big machlokas, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Shmuel about this, but the two that are four is something that I will do or something that I won't do, something that I did or something that I didn't do. Okay? Past, future, will do, won't do. Did, won't, didn't do. Right? Those are the four types of Shvuas Bitul. Okay? There are four types of Shvuas Shav. What's a Shvuas Shav is something that at the moment I say it, it's inconceivable, which is, I swear that this is an elephant. That's a Shvuas Shav. I swear that this is a pen. That's also a Shvuas Shav. Why?
Unnecessary. I mean, how could you controvert it?
Yeah, it's unnecessary. There's no... A Shvuah is something you should take so heavily upon yourself. Only make it when absolutely necessary to bolster your believability. Ibn Ezra says that when you hear people constantly saying, I swear to God, I swear to God, you are in the presence of a pathological liar. And the person knows it himself. Because he feels so little about his own believability that he feels the only way the person I'm talking to will accept what I'm saying is if I bring God into the picture. Right? Remember the psikta I said before. Right? What makes you think that your word enough isn't enough? Because he knows something about himself that maybe other people don't know yet, which is he's a pathological liar. Right? Don't blow your cover. Don't ever say, I swear to God. Unless you're called to in the court of law. Camelia?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, but I think in the United States, if you hear people saying that, and some are not even religious, I wouldn't call them pathological liars because it's a cultural thing. So they pick it up from the outside society. But you can make the argument that in the Gemara, when you deal with Jewish people already know. And it's a different standard.
Fair enough, it may be, but I'll tell it like this. And then the point though is that remember I said that when we were young, we're born selfish, and we need good teaching. So we need to be taught that your word is gold, and your word is your honor, and you don't need more than your word to be believable. That's all. Okay.
Yeah, but nobody teaches them that. Like, especially in this society, it's a slang. When they say, oh, I swear to God, it just means like, oh, it's so amazing, like unbelievable that it's actually true.
Yeah, I hear people use, it's almost like, you ever hear in the Seches Nedarim, Nidre Guzma, Nidre Onsin, Nidre Shgogos, right? Nidre Guzma is where you say, oh, I swear to God that I saw that snake and it looked like, and you use some kind of exaggeration. People, and they say, I swear to God that it was so, right? And then you say something that we should be just more careful with our words. I remember trying to be very machbid not to say something like, I'll be there in a second. No, you're not. It's already over. Don't talk that way. No, I know. And people are going to say, two minutes. Yeah. Right. So, when someone makes a speech and says, I'll be brief. Okay. Take out your notes. We should be, the whole point of this dibra is to be more careful with what we're saying, which is why one of the reasons why we start the holiest day of the year with an expression of how serious these oaths and vows are that we take upon ourselves. Now let me just finish by discussing the difference between the four different types of oaths, and then I want to discuss the difference between a neder and a shvur. So we have the shvur shav, which is by definition worthless; it wasn't needed. But a shvur shav levatel is a mitzvah. If you make a shvur to mevatel a mitzvah, that's also a shvur shav, right? So I make an oath that I will not sit in the sukkah. No such thing. You can't. Remember the lamdas and the gemara. Because you already took an oath at Har Sinai to keep the Torah. And an oath is not chal on an oath. You can't make an oath to undo an oath. Right? So as soon as someone says, I make an oath, I'm not going to wear tefillin tomorrow, that person made a shvur shav. Okay? Plus, a shvur shav is where you make a shvur to do something that's impossible. Okay? If you say, I make a shvur, I'm not going to sleep for 3 days, the Gemara doesn't say give him a chance to try to show that he can do it. No, the shvur shav is the moment he says it. Okay, that's shvur shav.
Shvur is a duplicative shvur. I'm sorry, you say it's duplicative. I'm taking shvur that I will eat in the sukkah and sukkahs.
Yes. The Gemara says, I wouldn't have known this. Intuitively, I believe. So, you know, I mean, some should be shown to say, but it's based on a pasuk. It's a pasuk in Tehillim Perikuf Yutes. It's called Nishbati va'akayema es kol mishpatei tzidkecha. I have taken an oath to observe your. So yes, there is a shvua that. Puts you at risk. I mean, if you break that shvur, you violated the third dibra. Yes. You can make a shvur to keep a mitzvah, but you can't make a shvur to violate a mitzvah. Okay.
Okay. Even though you're already obligated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's a teres hakosav, if you will, from this pasuk. All right. So shvur shav, shvur sheker. Shvur sheker means, a shvur's bitui is really a type of shvur sheker. You know, I want to be believed on something. I did this or I didn't do this, right? But the pasuk at hand is about the shvur shav, which is worthless at the moment it's made. Now, here's the difference between a shvur and a neder.
Rabbi, did we take a shvur to kabed es avicha v'es imecha, to honor your father and mother?
The shvur for all the mitzvahs of the Torah.
Okay, so if we already took a shvua, could someone say, I'm not to take, because this is in the Gemara, actually, where he had to go to Beis Din, where he made a thing, the next person that walks through that door, I swear I won't speak to for a month. Who walks through the door? The father. And he says, oh my God, what did I do? Or something like that, you know, or disrespect, whatever it is. And he has to go to Beis Din to disavow it, saying, had I known that would have been the thing, I would have never made the shvua. But what you're saying is the shvua was null and void because it was a shvua made against something that he had to already keep, that he already...
No, because the shvua was made in a way that could be chal. Could be chal. I mean, you know, it's a stupid shvua, but... It could be chal. Someone walks through the door, and I'm okay. I won't have anything to do with him for a month. You're hitting upon a Gemara that talks about a man who says, "I want no benefit from anybody in this room," and then he finds out that his father was in the room, and he wants to work out a way whereby he can still have hanon from his father, or give hanon to his father, and invite him to his simcha or something like that. Okay, but that's If someone says, I am making an oath that I will not honor my parents, the Gemara says he gets malchus immediately. Right? Nishba levatel es ha-mitzvah loke teche. There's no such thing. Okay? Now, I want to do two things here. I want to do two things here. One is discuss the difference between a shvua and a neder. And then it's a very interesting thing. Right? The word for making a shvua is nishva lasheker. Right? Nishvati ba'akayema. Right? Nishva. You don't say shavati. Right? Sovati is I've been satiated. But you don't say shavati. The shorish is shin bet ayin, right? Why is the nun in there for making a shvua? Right? Nishvati. Right? I'm saying you don't say I made a shvua. How do you say that? Right? There's a nun in there, but in kal, the nun is in kal. It's not in, that's just in nifal. You know your grammar?
Yeah.
The nun is in pl. It's in kal. The nun shouldn't be there. So here is the, I think we can explain it as a function of the difference between the neder and the shvua. Because, and that's why you have two different mesechas. There's mesechas nedarim and there's mesechas shvuos. And they're in two different sedarim. Nedarim is in Noshim, and shvuos is in Ezekin. Why? I know why Arachin is in Kodshim, because Arachin are oaths that are made to Hekdesh. Right? Arachin valuations at the end of Vayikra are go to the temple treasury. Right, but it's hard to explain why things that are very similar in scope are in two different sedarim and shas. The Gemara says the shvua is much more serious than the neder. Right, it's the Gemara's in the Maseches Nedarim says that the Jews were very lenient with nedarim. They were reckless with nedarim, but they were very careful with shvuos. Mind off the meaning. Well, what's the situation? So here is generally the approach taken by more Maseches Nedarim gets into this Indian, but here's the point. A shvua is something that you say on your own reflexive behavior. What reflects back to you. I make a shvua that I will learn a certain amount of Gemara by a certain time. I make a shvua that I will pay you a certain amount of money. I make a shvua that I will eat, I won't eat, I will sleep, I won't sleep, whatever it is. So a shvua goes on your behavior. That's stated in the Zikin. The Zikin is all about my behavior. The fires I'm not supposed to light, the damage I'm not supposed to commit, the disputes I'm not supposed to have. So Nezikin is going to have shavuos. As opposed to Nedarim is a whole different thing. Nedarim is in Seder Nashim because Nedarim is talking about a chepta. Nezirus is a type of a neder. It goes on a chepta. A nazir doesn't say, I won't eat grapes. A nazir says, grapes are forbidden to me. Grapes become like pork, right? So, I mean, it's a technicality in the Nedarim that if I want to say that something is forbidden to me, I have to say it by pointing to something not that God made forbidden to me, but that I can make forbidden to me. And that's known as konamus, a korban, right? Does it sound familiar? Kol nidre v'asare. V'konamei, v'chinuyei, v'chinusei, right? Konamos is the kinui for korban. Kinui, the opening line of Maseches Nedarim is called kinuyei nedarim kinedarim. Nazir too, called kinuyei naziros kinaziros. Right? What's a konam? Right? Konam means this thing is forbidden to me like a korban. a korban is forbidden to me, so too this thing is now forbidden to me. There's a question in the Gemara of yesh me'ila b'konimus. If I say this apple is forbidden to me like hektish, and then I eat the apple, do I have to bring a korban me'ila, an asham me'ila? As if though it was actually, you know, a part of
it. You didn't donate it to hektish.
Yeah, I didn't do it yet. I just said this apple is forbidden to me like a korban. Does it become like a korban? That's the question. So that's the, you've heard of the saying, right? Yesh me'ila b'konimus. Whether a konam vow can trigger a chiyuv of asher me'ila if someone takes it. So here's the difference. A shvua is on my behavior. A neder is on an object. There's no such thing as making a neder not to sleep. You make a shvua not to sleep. Okay? What you can do is make a neder that my eyes will not benefit from sleep. You get it? Because eyes are a thing. Sleep is not a thing. Eyes are a thing. Okay?
So when you say that, like Naziris, do you have to say it in such a way, like it's forbidden like this, and Nazir, and if you don't say it properly, then you didn't take on the Nazir status?
No. The first mission is that has Nazir tells you all the different ways that you can effectuate a Nazirus vow. So it has to be clear, your intention has to be clear, and your statement has to be clear.
Yeah, but you don't have to say then that the fruit is forbidden to me. You can say I won't eat the grape because I'm going to be a Nazir. And you're saying,
yeah, you don't even have to say that. You can just say I am going to be a Nazir for 30 days. And then you know what that means.
No, but I'm saying if you specifically say I won't eat the grape, I won't eat grapes or have anything grapes because I want to be like a Nazir. So, but that didn't really take it on the way you said that it's forbidden to me and these things. You didn't really.
Well, a Nazir is different. A Nazir is different because that's a specific type of vow that the Torah speaks about. And therefore, when the person takes it upon himself, we're reasonably sure he knows what he's doing. You see, when the Torah introduces the parsha of Nazir, it says, Adam ki yafli lindor neder Nazir. Ki yafli. Maze yafli. It's a pele. Yafli. Hafli vafele. That's why in the Rambam, you ever look at the Rambam section on vows, oaths, arachim, haramim, that section is called Sefer Hafla'ah. Hafla'ah, right? Sound familiar? So, because when it comes to making a Nazir vow, not all other vows, but a Nazir vow has to be abundantly clear.
But I'm not making a Nazir vow because a Nazir also doesn't cut his hair. All I said is, I am not going to eat grapes like a Nazir. I didn't say I'm making a Nazir vow that includes the cutting of the hair
So it comes your point right now is actually a Mishnah in Maseches Nazir. The Mishnah says that if I say I'm going to be a Nazir and I'm not going to go to funerals. Sorry, Charlie. Nazir picks up the other two also. If you say I'm going to be a Nazir, I'm just not going to cut my hair, but I want to go to funerals. No, this is not, you can't have only one of the three you can actually do away with. Is if you say I'm going to be a Nazir like Shimshon. Because then if you say I'm going to be a Nazir like Shimshon, then you can go to funerals. Why? Because Shimshon killed Philistines. And while the Gemara in Daf Dalet Maseches Nazir suggests that he pulled his hand back and he moved away from them before they died, the Gemara gives up on that logic and just says, no. The angel who told Shimshon's mother that she shouldn't eat anything that a Nazir can't eat, and she shouldn't, and the boy shouldn't ever cut his hair. The angel never said anything about the third aspect of Nazir, right? But Rabbi, whenever someone says a Nazir, Bistam, unless he says like Shimshon, he takes upon all three aspects, even if he doesn't actually mention it. Okay? So the Minchas Chinuch says the reason why Shavua is in Binyan Nifal, it's on page 3 if you're following me, that the reason why, actually the Sefer Chinuch itself says, you see, if you look at the top of page 3, right? Okay. Zeo shelashon shvua yavol olam b'loshon nifal. Klamar shenifal b'dvarav liyosok kayam b'masha amar b'kiyumo baruch. It nifal means the thing falls upon me and it becomes part of my reason for being. I have to make sure that as much as I eat today, as much as I breathe today, that I take care of this thing. Right? It's like it's sitting on my shoulders. Okay? All right, so this explains that what I wrote on the side here, Hevdel Bein Shvua LeNeder, and the Neder is in Seder Noshim. Also, the Gemara asks this question in Maseches Nedarim, and it says, we like Nedarim to be right near Maseches Ksuvos in Noshim because there is a husband-wife aspect to the Neder, which is that the husband has the right to abrogate the vow of the wife. And in fact, the whole parak in Maseches Ksuvos is dedicated to that, so it dovetails very nicely into the next Masechta, which is Nedarim.
Well, don't you have to have the Kavana when you're doing, like, when I said before, I'm going to be like a Nazir, not eat grapes. You said, well, you take on the other things. But I did not have the Kavana when I said that I am going to take on the other things. I just had the Kavana, and maybe I said it wrong. But if you didn't have that.
You're on fire tonight. Every single point you're bringing up is in the Gemara. The Gemara in Nazir says that if someone says, I'm going to be a Nazir, and then the next day he goes to a funeral. And they ask him, what are you talking about? Yesterday you took upon a Nazir vow. What are you doing? He goes, oh, I didn't know a Nazir is not supposed to go to funerals. I just thought a Nazir is not supposed to drink wine and cut his hair. So the Gemara discusses, what do you do with such a person or any others? In other words, he says, I'm going to be a Nazir, and he drinks wine the next day. He goes, I knew a Nazir is not supposed to take haircuts and go to cemeteries, but I didn't know he's not supposed to have wine. If I knew a Nazir is not allowed to have wine, I never would have made such a Nazir. I have to have wine every day. Okay? All right, so the Gemara discusses that. It says if the person was actually mamish oblivious, then yeah, then his ein libo, his mind and his mouth is not similar. Okay? All right, now what happens if someone... Imtishal, look on page 5. The Imtishal, like the second to last paragraph. About halfway down the page. Mashna dar shelo lechol davar shehu mitzvah alav lachlo. He made him, took an oath not to eat any maror on Pesach. Or any matzah on Pesach. Ech lo yachlenim sharei oso davar mitzvah hi alav ba'asei. V'yavo asei v'yit chelos asei. Delo yachil. Right. In other words, he has a mitzvah. He took an oath to eat to not eat this thing. So we say, sorry, you can't make an oath to undo a mitzvah. Right. So he gets malchus right away. So the Sefer Chinuch suggests v'yavo asei v'yidchelos asei d'lo yachel. Okay, so let him keep his vow. Keep the vow, keep the mitzvah sasei, right? And let the mitzvah sasei push aside the mitzvah lo sasei of lo yachil dvaro, which in the Midbar Perek Lamed means when you make an oath, keep your oath.
Lo yachil. That assumes the validity of the oath.
Yeah, lo yachel means don't make your words whole, right? Okay, so he says chuboscho shahaneder asay b'lav yeshbo lav de lo yachel ba asay t'bichol hayotzim mipiv yaseh. So while an asay is dochel lo sasay, but an asay is not dochel lo sasay and an asay. Okay. Mitzvah Saseh, the Mitzvah Saseh of keeping your vow of doing the mitzvah. In other words, I made a vow. I made a shvua. I'm not going to eat tomorrow. Okay, so I have a right now I'm sitting on a negative command. I'm not, don't violate this. A negative command. not to disregard your oath. But I have a positive command to eat the maror. Let the positive command of eating the matzah, or eating the maror, be docha the negative command of lo yachel dvarot. So comes the chinuch to say, no, no. Keeping an oath has two mitzvahs. One, a lo sasei, lo yachel dvarot. And two, an asei, chol yotzei mipiv yaseh. Do whatever your mouth says. So the asei of matzah or maror is not powerful enough to be doche an asei and a lo sasei. Okay. Now, there's something called potchin benolad. One of you made reference to this earlier. Rabbi, I think you did, when you talked about your father coming out the door first. The question of something called potchin benolad. I've had people on the show during the year come to me and say, Rabbi, I need to do Ataras Nedarim. I made a certain oath at a certain time and I thought I'd be able to manage it, but it's becoming increasingly difficult now. And basically, if I had known at the time I took the oath that I would not be able to maintain the oath, or had I known at the time that the new metzias would come up, a new situation, right? I remember the one particular case, someone in the shul when she was younger, she made an oath that she would never again wear pants. Right? Now, the Gemara tends to frown upon such things as assuring that you're going to do something you want to do by strengthening it with an oath. But, right, whatever it is, she took the oath. And then years later, she was much older at the time, and she was working out in the gym. And in the gym, it was very hard for her to do the aerobics or whatever else she was doing, if not wearing sweatpants or something. So she asked me if there's we say ein potchi v'nolad means I can't go over to her and open up and give her an opening. You know, you really do have a way out here. She's got to come up with something. She has to figure out how the metzias has changed, or had you known all that this is what this would be, the unintended consequences, would you have still made the oath? So that's where that is going. Okay. Okay. All right. So.
Isn't there a cases where someone says, I'm not going to go to the cemetery for the next week, then God forbid, you know, someone close dies or something like that? Or even if you're a nazir, you're still allowed to, you may have to touch a dead body because it's on the road and stuff
Mitzvah, yes.
And then you'd have to start the naziris all over again afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the Gemara has that. It's a Mishnah, since you're still on fire, Robert. Is that the Mishnah says that if the Kohen Gadol and the Nazir are walking down the street, sounds like the beginning of a joke, and they both run into a Meis Mitzvah, so which one should, there's a parak that starts off this way in the Seventh Nazir,
The Kohen Gadol is the one that's supposed to bury.
Why?
Because of the Shrua, the Nazir took or something like that.
Yeah, if the Nazir takes care of him, then he's got to bring three carbonos. He's got to shave his hair and start all over. I mean, come on. Maybe there's just 1 or 2 days left in his 3-year Nazirus. And if you make him do the take care of the dead body, then he's got to start all over again. And that's going to really be make him sinful. Right? Right? Okay. Yeah. The other side says, no. The Nazir took upon holiness upon himself. He brought that holiness upon himself. He brought that standard upon himself. That's an artificial holiness. But the Kohen Gadol has an inborn holiness.
Yeah.
Right? The carbon argument is a big argument. We don't want people just brachin the belterain and just willy-nilly bringing carbonos, right? He's got to bring a korb on this one. So let the Kohen Gadol, he'll get out of his problem in a week. He'll have the ashes of the paraduma sprinkled on him and shine.
What happens if it was right before Yom Kippur or something? Though?
Yeah,
very interesting.
He has a somebody prepared to take his place.
Yeah, there's someone to take his place. But very interesting. There's a famous story in the 1950s, I think. The Forward or the Allgemeine Journal, I'm going to send someone to interview Rav Soloveitchik. And YU considered it, a photo op, I don't know, but they let the guy come into the shiur and hear the shiur. I'm not sure what it's something, but something about the shiur made it into the Forward that week. Because the Rav was talking about the intense value placed on every human life at the moment, as if though it's the entire world. What example did the Rav give? Maybe it was an exaggeration, whatever it is, but this is the example he gave. He said, if the Kohen Gadol would face a Meis Mitzvah on Yom Kippur, he should bury that one individual, even though it means that the whole Klal Yisrael is not going to have the kapara from him. Now, Howard just said, the answer is okay, there's a replacement, waiting in the wings. Yeah, but he's an understudy, you know. This is the, right? So the person wrote in the forwards during that week, what a crock, it's ridiculous. The Kohen Gadol was never alone on Yom Kippur. He's surrounded by hordes and hordes of people during the entire avoda. Let's let one of the other people take care of the Meis Mitzvah. Right?
Missing the whole point of the hypothetical.
Yeah. So Rav Soloveitchik, who, you know, is just let the record speak for him. Remember the Gemara in the Mishnah in the Meseches Nazir, where we were just talking about this? Who should be the one to go, the Kohen Gadol or the Nazir? Tosfos on that Gemara discusses this eventuality of the Kohen Gadol facing a Meis Mitzvah on Yom Kippur. So the Rav could have said, you know, he didn't have to, because the students wrote in and said, why are you printing such a letter like this? It's a Tosfos. You want to mock Tosfos? Mock Tosfos. You don't have to mock
it. He's doing it's a theoretical analysis of the value of human life. It's not intended to. It's not an empirical situation.
On practically every page of Yevamos, it's a situation that has never happened in the history of man.
Right. It's clarifying the parameters of halacha. It has nothing to do with whether it actually happens or not.
Right. Okay. So the Gemara, the Rambam Paskins. Not only does he paskin that the Nazir should take care of the Meis Mitzvah, not the Kohen Gadol, the Rambam paskins a Nazir and a regular Kohen, the Nazir has to do it.
Wow.
Because he took it upon himself. The Kohen's Kedusha was DNA driven, God given, so to say. He didn't take it upon himself. The Nazir, you brought it upon yourself, so you brought this upon yourself.
No, but I could see why it'd be the difference between Shabbos, you know, and Modim, because Kodesh Baruch Hu made Shabbos Kodesh. He himself is supposed to are doing it.
Right. Okay, Chevra, fastest hour of my week. Have a great night, everybody. Next week we're getting into the largest section of the Sefer Chinuch, which is Shabbos. In Yanni Shabbos. I'm going to have to figure out how we'll do it. Do Shabbos in maybe a few weeks, so we'll see. Okay, everybody, have a great, great evening. Rosh Chodesh tomorrow. Chodesh Tov, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you, Zan. Thank you, Zan. Bye-bye, everyone.